tomorrow will bring. Ask me how I enjoy the day. Don't ask me what songs I'm gonna sing. Just turn your ear my way.
Definitely gonna Shazam that thing.
Yeah, R.I.P. the man, the myth, the mustache, Burt Reynolds.
Well said.
Yeah. This is Ask Me What I Am from the album Ask Me What I Am by
1973, right?
I believe that sounds about right.
Yeah.
He's definitely I'm saying Bob Dylan and Kris Kristofferson.
Definitely,
are his main influences.
Definitely trying to get a Kris Kristofferson vibe going, I think. Right?
Don't ask me.
There's a little hint of Neil Diamond in there as well, like early Neil Diamond.
Certainly, yeah. Welcome. Hey, everybody.
Maybe he'll have a late career music or posthumous, like a Rodriguez kind of thing. Like this record.
That could be.
Rediscovered.
Or like a Burt Reynolds hologram at Coachella.
Well, welcome everyone to the Sun Cinema Podcast, a weekly radio show that examines the highs and lows of the medium of film through the filtered lens of Washington, D.C.'s only privately owned art house cinema. I'm your host, Jason Cauley. I'm joined, of course, by my co-hosts and the proprietors of Sun Cinema, David Cabrera and Ryan Hunter Mitchell. Gentlemen.
You want to go first?
Yeah, I'll go first. We're here.
Say hi.
Hello. Hey.
This is season 3 now, right? At Full Service Radio?
Yeah.
We're nice. Doing it.
Every time you do that sound, I think of It's Always Sunny, and I just want the da-da-da-da-da-da.
Which right is back, after, by the way.
Yeah.
New season. The first episode was pretty funny.
It was good.
It was good. They still got it. So we're on season 3. We're catching up on Always Sunny now.
10 years behind.
Yeah. We'll get there. So a bit about us as the Sun Cinema Podcast. We have a little tiny movie theater down the street from the Lion Hotel in Northwest Washington, D.C. And we have like 30 seats.
30 seats.
And we show odd movies that people probably don't want to watch, and we force them to.
I think we do a good mix of that, definitely, and then things that they do want to watch.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Things that are a little more easily digestible, I guess.
Maybe. Sure.
You know?
Yeah, well, we try to run the gamut.
We've been off the podcast for a minute. We came back last week with a great interview with Emily Gasoy, but we mostly took the summer off and just kind of hung out, went on vacation, saw a couple summer movies. So catch us up to date with August. Just breeze through. What were some of the highlights at Sun Cinema?
So August was fun. So we do a themed months.
Every month's a theme.
Every month is a theme, loosely or not loosely.
Yeah, sometimes they make sense.
Sometimes they make sense, sometimes they don't. October is almost always horror. We've done a Noirvember. We've done a month of all mystery movies. August was going to be called Some Like It Hot. We were unable to show the movie Some Like It Hot, so it was called Suns Likes It Hot. So we did a bunch of hot movies, physically hot, steamy, including things like The Secretary, Magic Mike, Days and Confused, Dog Day Afternoon, Summer of Sam, and The Heat of Night.
I'm sweating just thinking about this.
Yeah, it's getting me all
especially
hot
like Dog
and
Day. Dog Day Afternoon is just like a sweaty fest.
Yeah.
It works so well.
It works very well. My personal favorites in that month were definitely our friend Mark Cisneros presented two different Sun Ra documentaries, one called Cry of Jazz, which was a short PSA. That's basically about why jazz is black, which is like totally like hard hitting and like substantive, but also at the same time, like 50s PSA. And so it's kind of funny as well. And so it was a very interesting watch. Then that was followed by this movie called Sun Ra, A Joyful Noise, which is just a doc about him doing some shows. And it's like them interviewing him at like his house
And that went without a hitch, right? It was a great night, enjoyed by all.
Yeah, that was great. They call it Sun Ra, a Joyful Noise, because there's a part where he's being interviewed and saying something about neighbors complaining. Like, they're at his house, and they, like, name the address of his house, and it's just, like, shots of them at Sun Ra's house, you know,
cool.
Which is cool. But at one point, they got in trouble for making music, and he was like, "We're not making music, we're making a joyful noise."
We'll just tell that to our neighbors when they're asking us to turn it down.
Yeah, that's what we're doing. I'm trying to think of what else there was. Anaconda. I mean, the whole movie is just, the best part of that is every time it pans over to John Voight and he's just got the craziest look. And someone was, I forget who I was talking to, who was saying, like, I think that's when he, like, actually went crazy. It's like,
yeah, it was about that time that he,
it's like he got lost in his role in Anaconda and never came back.
I like that broke him and not Deliverance.
Right.
Anaconda broke Voight.
I'm trying to think.
Johnny Guitar
was amazing. Johnny Guitar is funny, like, watching it again, it does have some sort of camp elements to it, and some of the, like, her lines are somewhat, like, overwrought, but at the same time, the movie is truly about Joan Crawford's character. Johnny Guitar is a Western by Nicholas Ray from, is it 1950?
54.
Yeah.
That
was, like, kind of weirdly received in the U.S., but European people got it. The French New Wave. Yeah, they loved it.
It's like the Velvet Underground of Westerns.
It's the Velvet Underground.
Like, everyone who saw it made a movie.
Yeah. But yeah, Joan Crawford is just fucking amazing in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one that even a lot of our cinema heads who come by Sons, like, hadn't seen that. And I heard them talking about it later, just like, oh, wow, it's one I never saw. That's great.
Oh, dope. That's cool. The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert was another one that I hadn't seen that one. And it's...
Oh, so you'd never seen it?
I had not.
Oh, no, it's very good. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting because it's like this, like, queer movie, but it's also... It feels like a family movie. Like, mm-hmm. It feels like a cool, progressive family movie about acceptance and, like... But it's also, you know, people dance, you know.
Yeah, it's very fun. But yeah, it has some real touching moments.
It has had a lot of value to it. Family value.
A lot of glitter.
A lot of glitter.
A lot of value. Anything? Did we see anything outside of Sons? I mean, I know David didn't because he's forced to watch too many movies at Sons.
Yeah. What was summer?
This
was just, to me, a brutal summer. I don't know if people agree with that or not. I just felt like the summer has just been awful from, like, Ocean's 8 on.
Yeah.
It's just been kind of rough.
I think we smashed Ocean's 8 earlier in the year podcast.
Totally crushed it. And I don't regret it at all.
Picking on Ocean's 8.
But even like Tag and stuff like that, they're like, oh, okay, this will just be a fun summer movie. There's stuff you just can't get beyond.
Just too irritating.
Yeah, it's just not good stuff.
Yeah.
There's been a couple of things I know. You know, we'll talk about.
Well, I just saw Black Klansman.
I saw that the other day too.
Yeah, so did I.
I haven't seen it.
During the movie, I really...
You guys can tell.
I really was disliking it for a whole host of reasons during the movie. I've thought about it a bit since then. There's some things that are good about it, but...
There's some classic Spike Lee stuff in there that he always does, like, really, really well. Like, the dance sequence.
There's great shots, great music.
Right. There's stuff like that that is captivating for those moments. I just don't know if it holds up as a whole movie. It's 2 hours and 5 minutes, so it's a little over the two-hour mark.
Sure is.
And it kind of, unfortunately, to me, I don't... This is always kind of a good barometer, I guess, is if I look at my watch, that means something's probably... Mm. It maybe not detrimentally off, but something's a little off, you know, that if I'm like, how long are we in here?
Barry Lyndon.
You know, if I'm pulling a Barry Lyndon and looking down... you know, just to clock the time, something's a little off. Yeah. So,
yeah, and as an espionage movie, because, like, the idea is that a police officer infiltrates the KKK.
A black police officer with the help of a white police
officer. Yeah, and they don't... It's not a very tight espionage-type movie, so that part's a little weak. The suspense is a little lacking.
It doesn't really ramp up. When there's opportunity for that to happen, there's a couple of scenes when they're over at one of the Klansmen's house where you've really got like some tension that could be building, and it never quite feels like a lot's on the line.
Yeah, it doesn't feel that high risk.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah,
at any
exactly.
point.
I remember when the credits rolled, I basically just said out loud, well, that was a Spike Lee joint.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was. Oh, and there's one racist cop. Like, that's right. The problem with the police department. There's just one cop who's racist in Colorado in the 70s.
Yeah.
Well, so that part. Yeah, it's okay. What else did you see? Crazy Rich Asians?
Crazy Rich Asians.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Anyone?
I have seen it. Yeah. Jack? No,
saw it last night, actually.
Ooh, recent. Yeah, I saw it a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I was saying I went in blind not knowing it was a rom-com. And then I was like, oh, this is a rom-com. Okay. Yeah. And it kind of played out exactly like one.
Yeah. Kind of. Cool. Yeah, it checks all the boxes.
It did. It was a fun ride.
I'm going to say best summer movie. Okay. And I don't want to be saying this, but I think it was Mission Impossible.
Oh.
Whatever number we're on.
Wow. Well, I have the box office here. I don't know if
I mean, it's too long. Oh, yeah. Give me the box office on
it's
this.
It's too long.
Can we guess in the studio what the winner was here for the summer?
Is it Crazy Rich Asians or Mamma Mia?
Crazy Rich Asians came in at number 9.
Oh, 9. Wow.
Number 9. Well, still Mamma Mia at 11.
Okay. Hang on. Don't give us number 1 yet.
Yeah. Was there another Jumanji this year? What Transformers are we
on? Oh, no, there's, yeah. It's
I'm
going to
give
be...
you the total gross here. We have $604
million
for the number
million.
One movie of the summer.
When are we counting summer starting?
That's like what I'm just about to look
Infinity
up.
Infinity War or something?
It was released on June 15th, so that's fair.
Yeah, that's I'll count that.
Okay, what is it?
Was it Infinity War? Man.
No, that was like...
What was that?
Let's see, Infinity...
That was like May. I think that was February.
Too early. Okay. Gosh.
Well, we don't even know.
No, go ahead, Jack. What's number one?
We'll count down from 5. How about that?
Okay. Go for it.
I love it.
So at number 5, Solo, A Star Wars Story, at $213 million. Hmm. At number 4, Ant-Man and the Wasp, at $214 million as well. Fine. Number 3, Deadpool 2, at $318 million.
Jeez.
Do we have any guesses as for number 2 or 1?
Rampage.
No. Okay. Number 2, Jurassic World.
Oh, duh. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Of course that made money.
$415 million.
Yeah.
And at number 1, Incredibles 2.
Oh.
What? $600 million.
That's cool.
That's the winter of the summer.
Incredibles?
Was Incredibles 2 good? Incredible. Did anyone see?
I'm sure it's fun.
Yeah. Rounding out the top 10.
I loved
was,
the first one.
Mission Impossible at 6. Hotel Transylvania 3 at 7. Damn. Ocean's 8 at 8.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. Crazy Rich Asians at 9. And The Meg at 10.
Wow. All right. The Meg. Right on. Yeah. That's like the shark movie.
Yeah.
But cool. Yeah, I mean, kind of weak summer.
What a summer.
I honestly didn't
Hotel
even know
Transylvania
there was
3.
I don't think I've even seen anything about a new Jurassic Park movie. I don't think I even knew that happened.
It came and went.
I feel like I went and saw the last one.
This one was better than that one, but because this one's more willing to just be a bad movie.
Okay.
That last one was one of the most infuriatingly bad movies I think I'd seen.
The fourth one being the first one with Chris Pratt.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that one was bad.
Yeah.
I mean... I don't know if that needs to be said, but yeah. I'm going Mission Impossible. If anyone's got, I mean, it's 25 minutes too long. There's
it's
like
still
a
got
helicopter
like a
goes forever, but it's pretty good.
It's got like a 97% on Rotten Tomatoes.
See?
I mean,
damn.
Like, it's a little too long.
Tom Cruise, pretty good.
And it's running like 215 or 220, right? Like it's a long.
It is. One surprise in here is Uncle Drew at 24, cracking the top 25.
Which is Uncle Drew?
That's the basketball movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I think that's got to count as a pretty big win for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Top 25.
That easily could have been a TV movie.
But, yeah, more people would have seen it, but they wouldn't have paid for it. So.
What is
it'll be on Netflix soon. Okay, so best leading man, Tom Cruise for me. That's
That's another summer that where Tom Cruise wins.
No one's gonna. Does anyone else have a better movie? All right, let's roll a Burt Reynolds clip, and then let's just get into some back when Hollywood meant something.
Eddie, hi.
All right,
Jack.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm in the theater, you know. You got to keep the seats full.
Yeah, go from here.
But I don't want to make a film where they show up, they sit down, they jack off, and they get up and they get out before the story ends. It is my dream. It is my goal. It is my idea to make a film that the story just sucks them in. And when they spurt out that joy juice, they just gotta sit in it. They can't move until they find out how the story ends. You know, I want to make a film like that. And I understand, you know, they have to make films. I made them myself, you know, that are a few laughs. Everybody fucks their brains out, and that's fine. That's my dream, to make a film that is true and right and dramatic.
There it is. That was an Oscar-worthy performance.
On his way to an Oscar nomination, yeah.
Yeah, I think he lost to Robin Williams, Good Will Hunting.
Oh, Good Will Hunting. All right.
Yeah.
Matt Damon.
Matt Damon.
So I knew Burt Reynolds from Cop and a Half, and then when I was getting into cool movies, Boogie Nights, and I mean, I knew who he was as like a former star, but I hadn't followed his career or anything, but I think he's incredible in Boogie Nights.
Without a doubt.
And all the drama about how he hated that movie. He won't even watch, or hadn't even watched the movie. Like, he had a miserable time. Hated P.T. Anderson.
Yeah, they got into true physical altercations on set and afterwards.
What were they fighting about?
Oh.
Anything and everything.
He just... I've heard that he thought he was kind of being mocked. And he thought all these young guys were like pretentious know-it-alls, especially P.T. Anderson.
I can see that.
And that he didn't really know how to make a film. I mean, you got to remember, Reynolds had directed, albeit not well, but had directed dozens of films by 1997.
Sure.
And I say dozens. I'll check myself. But
I wish I had the line. He talks about how like P.T. Anderson would just like pat himself on the back so hard after every shot, just be, oh my god, this is the first time anything's being shot like this. And I love the movie, and you know, the opening shot, it's like on the marquee sideways, it does this great tracking shot all the way down the neighborhood into the club. It's all this great single shot.
Sure.
And Burt Reynolds is like, yeah, like Touch of Evil, and he's like, I just named like five movies that did that already.
Yeah, Goodfellas.
Like, he just like shot down P.T. Anderson's shot. Yeah, I guess P.T. Anderson's like 23, just blown away by himself. And Burt Reynolds is like, yeah, there's like five movies that have done this.
He had directed 14, but 35 episodes of Evening Shade.
Oh, on top of that.
So, I mean, like, not saying he was a great director or anything like that. He just definitely had a little bit of credibility.
I mean, he definitely directed a lot more than P.T. Anderson, than 23-year-old Paul Thomas Anderson.
Who had a couple of shorts under his belt, yeah.
So that's kind of Burt's big comeback. That was like, well, it didn't go anywhere, but it's a great...
It should have been a launching pad for like the, you know, kind of a twilight career of kind of critical stuff. And he did some indie stuff afterwards, thinking he was kind of going in that direction. It's always been the struggle of Burt Reynolds, too. I think a lot of people see him as this kind of cut up movie star, you know, kind of laughing at the screen, breaking the fourth wall. And he did all of that ad nauseum for sure. But he was definitely a guy when he was coming up that people in the business and himself took pretty seriously as potentially like, oh, this guy could be like a real Brando caliber movie star. Now, he was always going to be kind of a movie star, because he just had those looks and that build and the personality and everything. He was a movie star. But people wanted him to be like a serious movie star. And he did a couple of things early in his career, like putting out the album we had on and posing nude for, you know, Cosmopolitan magazine. And, you know, just made some kind of things that were successful, but kind of took away from... Hey, you know, real movie stars, real serious actors don't do this stuff, you know.
Sure.
And kind of put him in a bag. And then he just kind of went down that road, Smoking the Bandit success in 77. Like, just, I mean, people, that movie was a hit for 2 years. It wasn't just a, you know, like, oh, this is a good summer movie. It was like playing in movie theaters for 12 months, you know. That was huge, a huge, huge movie.
Yeah, I think it's easy for us to like lose how big of an actor.
Oh my gosh, what a star!
Burt was. I mean, I think from like 72 to 85, he was on the top 10 highest grossing male actors.
Exactly.
And a few of those years, he was the number one.
5 years in a row. Nobody else had done that. Five years in a row, number one box office grossing actor. You know, put his name on it, it's going to make money. You know?
Damn.
And
what were the years of that?
That like was like 77 to 82.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Right there from kind of Smokey and the Bandit on.
But let's not...
Did Ford take over after that? Because I feel like Harrison Ford did a bunch of shit early on, too. Early 80s.
Well, that's kind of interesting, because I think what's very special about Burt Reynolds is not just what he was in, but what he was not in. He's like famous for turning down a lot of roles and making all these...
Because he was such a huge star. I mean, he got offered everything.
But even before, he had been offered to replace Connery as Bond.
Right.
And he was like, no way, an American cannot do this.
And that's
character.
Like 69.
Yeah.
You know, like damn. He wasn't even a star yet.
Man, but he would have been a good Bond.
Yeah, he would have been a good Bond, but how do you...
Would have been something.
How is that guy not American? What's Burt Reynolds' middle name? Does anyone
know? Oh, is it Seamus?
Let's see. His full name is Burton Leon Reynolds Jr.
Burton Leon
see,
Reynolds
Jr. That guy is so American. He's not playing James Bond.
That is Florida all day.
He was from he's born in Lansing, Michigan.
Yeah, grew up in Florida, I believe.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And I believe, died in Florida as well.
Yeah.
So he skips James Bond. He is floated to be Michael Corleone.
Yeah. Right?
And Brando says he's going to walk. So their respect for each other isn't on par. But then he turns down Han Solo.
Yeah.
And for Star Wars.
And a decade later, turns down John McClane.
Oh,
I mean,
for
that's
Die Hard.
Still how big he was, even in like 87, 86, you know, 88. He's still that
I'm
huge.
Glad he turned that one down.
Well, many of these. But he made room for the next big stars.
Right.
Him getting out of this made room for Harrison Ford and then Bruce Willis. He has a good diss. Man, he just throws rocks all over the place. What's his diss on Bruce Willis?
Oh, it was like, what did he say? It was something really, really tough.
Damn it. I think I lost it.
I don't...
Something like, I don't regret turning down anything that Bruce did.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... That may not be as... Yeah.
Yep, that's pretty much exactly it. I don't regret turning down anything Bruce Willis did.
Wow. So is Norm MacDonald done then?
Yeah.
Oh, officially done. No, I think he has a podcast.
Yeah.
It's like where we all go to die.
Yeah.
Womp womp. Let's, real quick, before we go into like Deliverance, his serious work, Bob Chin,
who
Burt Reynolds' character Jack Horner is loosely based on in Boogie Nights, also hated the movie and like was really, felt really bummed how they portrayed his work as like really amateur and shitty. I actually think P.T. Anderson kind of liked the work of Bob Chin and the work of Burt Reynolds. It wasn't so much about...
No, yeah. I think that was a bit of a misunderstanding, and I don't know how much of that Paul Thomas Anderson didn't correct or, you know...
Sure.
Along the way, being a very young guy at the
time.
It's
almost like he's making fun of them, but I think it's a true respect.
Yeah, I think so, too. I don't think there was any dissing. And I mean, like, to set up shots, if you look, we were looking at it earlier, like the shot-by-shot sequence and our shot sequences where Paul Thomas Anderson's setup is exactly identical to Bob Chin's.
Yeah, it's straight from some of the Johnny Wadd movies, like exact scenes, exact placement of, like, lamps. He clearly was a big fan of his work. Whatever that says about Paul Thomas Anderson.
Some more quotes here before you move on Burt turning roles down.
Yeah.
So when asked about turning down the Bond role, they said, "Did you regret turning it down?" "Yes, I do." When asked about the Richard Gere's character in Pretty Women, "Why did you pass?" Reynolds said, "Because I'm an idiot." When asked about turning down One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, he responded, "Because I'm stupid."
Right.
So,
There's a little bit of a misnomer with that. Maybe a misnomer with that, I should say. The One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, it was actually Milos Forman's first choice. And Milos had approached Burt Reynolds about doing it. Burt was on the fence. And kind of at that same time, Michael Douglas, who produced the film, like the regular Michael Douglas, came by and was like, "Hey, you don't really want this guy. Like, you want?
Oh, no.
We got a chance to get Jack Nicholson. Hold the phone before you go signing up Burt Reynolds."
Jack Nicholas.
Yeah.
And apparently Nicholson, you know, signed on before Burt had a real opportunity.
Damn.
See, it's not just what he did, it's what he didn't do. He's just Nicholson, owe him so much.
Nicholson owes him two Oscars because the second one was James L. Brooks 100% wanted him for Terms of Endearment and had him locked up, except he had an obligation to do another film called Stroger Ace with his old buddy Hal Needham, who directed Smoking the Bandit. And he felt obliged.
Hooper.
What's that?
I think he also did Hooper.
Oh, yeah, for sure. 100% he directed Hooper. But he felt obliged to, you know, Hal Needham to do that role over the Nicholson role in Terms of Endearment, which also won Nicholson his second Oscar. So twice turned down roles that ended up netting Nicholson an Oscar.
Damn.
And Robin Williams owes him for the Oscar, because if he hadn't badmouthed his role, his own movie so bad during the whole press junket for Boogie Nights, he would have had that Oscar.
I'm old enough to remember that, and I remember it going from, like, Burt Reynolds has got this in the bag.
Because he won the Golden Globe.
Yeah, to Burt Reynolds has not got a snowball's chance in hell of walking out of this place with an Oscar after everything he's done. Because he wasn't just knocking, you know, P.T. Anderson. He was knocking the entire film, all the actors that were involved in the film, the Hollywood, you know, studio system in general, you know, I mean, just basically gone off a ledge, and they were like, nope.
Goes down swinging.
Yeah.
Well, let's venture back in time to the movie that kind of launched him.
Yeah, you just saw this last night again.
Cop and a half.
Sorry. All dogs go to heaven. Charlie Barkin. Deliverance. Yeah. Do you watch it also over the weekend, or do you just know it so well?
I just know it pretty well. I've seen it a few times, I guess. I think I own it in some form. Yeah. But
let's roll his iconic character. Let's get a feel for him.
Machines are going to fail. And the system's going to fail. And then?
And then what?
Then survival. Who has the ability to survive? That's the game. Survive.
And you can't wait for it to happen, can you? You can't wait for it. Well, the system's done all right by me.
Oh, yeah. You got a nice job. Got a nice house. Nice wife. Nice kid.
Make that sound rather shitty, Lewis.
Why do you go on these trips with me, Ed?
I like my life, Lewis.
Yeah, but why do you go on these trips with me?
You know, sometimes I wonder about that.
Had to get his little yip at the end there. Yeah, I mean,
this is the movie that turned him into a movie star, though. I mean, like, he went from being kind of a Gunsmoke returning character, you know, kind of TV bounce around, done a couple of other Westerns. But, like, this, people were like, holy crap, this dude's electric.
You know? I mean, he's like a... It's almost like Russ Cole or something from True Detective. I mean, it's a really fun, kind of nihilistic character. He can just run away with it, but he does it incredibly well.
Yeah, and does a good job of not kind of trademark Burt Reynolds in later years of kind of going overboard. You know, it's all dialed in really tightly.
John and he has Borman no mustache in this movie.
Right, either. It's a non-stash movie. I mean, he's like incredibly handsome, like wearing the wetsuit?
Sleeveless
like, wetsuit top. Yeah. with the chest hair and everything. Like, it's badass. But, you know, I mean, it was a great film all the way around. I mean, it was a really good film all the way around, in my opinion. And ended up getting a few Oscar nominations as well. I was nominated for Best Picture in a year back in the days when they only did five. So, I mean, in the early 70s, that's not easy to do.
Yeah, well, didn't do 11. back then, or 14, whatever, Best Picture noms. They do
Yeah,
that.
Exactly.
Well, that so that was John Voight.
John Voight, who needed like a comeback kind of movie, too. He'd just come off a couple of crappers after doing Midnight Cowboy, had a couple of rough films.
And then you get Ned Beatty.
Whose first film ever.
No way.
Yeah, that's okay. Ned Beatty's first film.
So that launches
film.
Him as well, and yeah. I forget who plays Drew in it.
Ronnie Cox.
Oh, Ronnie Cox, okay. Yeah, so you got a great, solid cast right there. I mean, the movie, people always ask, could it get remade now?
Right.
And
anything can get remade now.
Sure.
But could you?
How have they not?
Right.
At the same time, there's maybe a more, you could have a slightly more thorough depiction of Southern poor.
Right, exactly.
It definitely has its flaws.
You definitely have to change some of that. Like an early Tom Hardy would have been, like Tom Hardy 5, 6, 7 years ago would have been a good like breakout role for Tom Hardy to play the Burt Reynolds character.
Play who could play Burt Reynolds in anything?
That's
yeah. Who are the leading men? Who are we left with? Who have we got?
Norm.
We got Norm McDonald.
To play
is that Burt our Reynolds. Best leading man?
I mean,
I guess
like
Leonardo DiCaprio. No.
Yeah, when you talk about those guys, you've got to go big. I mean, I know, like I said. Most people, even since Boogie Nights 20 years ago now, you know, don't think about Burt Reynolds in those terms. But if you were alive and kicking and walking the streets, you know, anywhere in the mid-1970s on through the early 80s, mid-80s, like Burt Reynolds was like a freaking movie star, like a movie star's movie star, like not even in the way that Tom Cruise is a movie star now, because they're and DiCaprio, because they're both kind of these guys that are living in their weird own little worlds. Like Burt Reynolds was a little more accessible guy, you know. Yeah. I mean, the media wasn't the media that it is today, so he did like fake you know news. The cover of Good Housekeeping's got Burt Reynolds on this month, you know, or whatever.
He's on Golden Girls.
Yeah, I mean, like,
how about Dwayne the Rock Johnson?
Ooh,
that's
maybe
a big superstar. Yeah.
But maybe that's a good, there's some correlation there, too.
He could be on the cover of Good Housekeeping.
He could.
Yeah, and he doesn't have the full depth, but he's universally likable.
Yeah.
And has, you know, that chiseled build.
All right. Oh, sure. That's a good
one. I'm saying The Rock's probably the closest, actually.
I think you're on it, Jack.
He's all actually right. Probably one of the highest grossers also
and
for
also,
the last 10 years.
Yeah.
That's true.
I don't know where Rampage came in this summer. Did we cover
probably,
that?
Probably, how was it compared to Uncle Drew?
But yeah, The Rock, Dwayne Johnson. That's
like Rampage did not make the top.
Someone 100. Get The Rock a mustache.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
It didn't make the top 20. Well, maybe we don't even know when the hell Rampage came out. For all I know, it came out 3 years ago, and I just saw that it was on.
It came out in April, so.
Oh okay.
Oh yeah.
So it did $450 million at the box office.
Shut
up. Yeah, man.
Oh.
Yeah. That is proof that you can literally put The Rock in anything, and he's gonna make money.
And Jumanji, I heard, was good. Whenever that came out, I didn't see it, but that killed too.
Yeah,
if Rob Ford or whoever we are always quoting from Esquire.
Oh, Esquire. Yeah,
he talks about how Rampage and Jumanji in China. These movies are blowing away the Star Wars movies. The Rock is great, and that's like emerging as one of the biggest markets.
Sure.
So The Rock is going to be bigger than Disney soon.
Yeah.
We're saying it here.
So if you guys hang on, I'm actually going to email you a picture right now. The email just went through. This is The Rock, a young Dwayne Johnson with a mustache.
Oh, shit.
No way.
What?
That's quick Googling there.
Be able to link this to our
can
notes.
Can someone
or
describe
something?
It? How's his mustache compared to Tom Selleck or whoever it is we're talking about?
Where did you email this to?
Oh, to Ryan and
Reservations
to,
at the Line.
Sun Cinema at Gmail and Ryan.
Oh, well.
It's wispy. It's a wispy mustache. Yeah. It's not a Burt Reynolds mustache.
It's a chocolate milk mustache.
I encourage listeners to Google Dwayne Johnson mustache for themselves. And
did you guys get it?
I didn't get it, but we're getting it described. I mean, I feel it.
Yeah. It's small.
Well, let's maybe paddle downriver a little bit away from Burt Reynolds and the leading men of Hollywood. And
I just got it.
Let's talk about it.
All right, hold everything.
Wait, never mind. Let's go back to that. Wait.
Oh, that is a good one, Jack. Dwayne Johnson.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, Rock. Oh, damn. Okay.
Yeah, not what I would have anticipated.
Yeah. Yeah, let's keep him clean shaven. We'll keep him clean. All right, Rock, you can be clean. You're still manly.
Turns into like a slightly Martin Luther King Jr. look on him.
Yeah. You know he went to high school in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania?
Oh, no, I didn't.
Huh.
I think The Rock, it's more about like the less you know, the more you like him. Because like, I know we all want him to be president and whatever happens in our awful future, but I don't think we want to look too closely at that either, you know? He could be Rampage president. Right. He could be the president of the Rampage world.
He can be Rampage all day.
All right, let's talk about last week and next week at Suns. For those of you, if any of you are still listening through our banal chatter about mustaches and Burt Reynolds.
So, why wouldn't they be?
Yeah, this that's true.
Fascinating.
Yeah, who turned this off? Who could?
Who could? So we were mentioning earlier that we do themed months. The theme for this month, for September, is all Latin American stuff. We did this last year. Last year did more like classics. This year there's a fair amount of like newer stuff, but all, I don't know. I think it's all been pretty awesome so far. Ryan, you were there for El Mariachi.
It was great.
Great.
It's good. Shoot him up.
Yeah.
Also 23 years old when he made that.
Was he?
Think.
Yeah.
Something like
Lucia
that.
Was an interesting Cuban movie. It had three parts, three different women named Lucia in three different like time periods in Cuba. It's like shot really well in black and white. Lost some people on that one, but you know, it was long.
It was a long ass movie.
It was clocking in 3 hours plus.
Yeah,
right?
It was a long one.
Yeah, and it was a rainy Sunday. Like during each intermission, everyone's just kind of like, oh, I forgot something. Got to Oops. See ya.
Then A Fantastic Woman. I saw the beginning of that. Josh was the one that presented that. Every Monday night, we're doing this a series of queer movies presented by Screen Queen. Yeah, our friend Josh Fogelsong. I watched the beginning of that one. It was very good, but I mean...
Yeah, it was best foreign language film of the year.
Did you see it or not?
Let's do a review of the beginning of the movie.
I've struggled to be able to see that film, and then I was out of town when you guys were showing it. So
showed this movie called La Vida Útil, a useful Life, last Tuesday. And I have to say that I think maybe this is my favorite movie of all time now. It's from Uruguay from 2009, 2010. It's about a failing movie theater that is losing money, and it's about this old guy who runs it and sort of him having to figure out what to do with his life. It is very deadpan, like a Kurosaki, Jarmusch movie. It's black and white. It's funny. It's shot really well. There are a lot of parallels to...
The future Sun Cinema.
Right, yeah. They have a radio show. There's a old guy involved who talks at... You've met Larry.
Yeah, I know
It's like
Larry.
Our Larry.
There's Larry our and Larry. I have shared more than one
We got to bring him on one time.
Oh, Lord. That would be painful.
Do it.
You'll be...
There's a part where they present a movie, their friend Gonzalo, and we have a friend Gonzalo whose brother was there. There's a part where they're showing him getting his hair cleaned at the hair salon across the street. Anyways, that movie was great. We did a show on Wednesday night.
Wait a minute. What was that film again? What's the name of it?
La Vida Útil.
La Vida Útil.
And it's only like an hour long. And if it were more than an hour long, I don't know.
You would have killed yourself.
Yeah, maybe. Honestly, it was so great. People were like really into it. It was charming. Then last Wednesday we did a show, which was interesting.
A saxophone show.
It was a sax show.
It was the sax player from Harry and the Potters.
Yeah.
A Harry Potter themed band.
Yeah, and then Perry Soul. It was cool. Our neighbor didn't like us.
Yeah, it was a joyful noise.
We made a joyful noise, that's for sure. Thursday was also really good. It's a documentary from the 80s.
the director is Dutch, but I think was spending a significant amount of time in Peru. It's about Peruvian taxi drivers during the 80s, and honestly, it was funny. It was like, when did Night on Earth come out?
From
like late 80s?
Early 90s.
92, 93.
I almost wonder if like Jarmusch watched this and was like, oh, I could do something. Like, because it's just all these like cab drivers, and they're all very candid, and like some of them are sad, some of them are funny, but it was all very like well done. You get kind of sucked in.
91.
91? Yeah.
Confirmation, Night on Earth.
Cool. A lot of the humor was also the, you know, like showing you the way that they like rigged their cars to work because they're all like beat up and yeah. Like this guy like showing how each time he like takes off the head of the stick and like all, rearranges all these things. It's really funny. But anyways, last Friday we did Post Tenor Brass Lux. It's a movie by Carlos Regadas. Right? Have you seen this one, Jason?
No, I haven't.
I think you would like this one as well. In the trailer, it says they reference like Terrence Malick. It's shot really, really well. They do this weird, like the aspect ratio thing, where like the outside is like real blurry, like and it's like a circle, and it, like it's kind of disorienting the whole thing.
Yeah.
The movie does have an arc, like a narrative, but it's also, it feels kind of disconnected. Like, I was trying to think of an example of another movie where you're kind of observing. There's this
like any recent Terrence Malick film.
Sure. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Seriously, like any of the last five he's done or so.
Yeah.
I mean, no, it's not necessarily a bad thing. I'm not.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not
where you're think. Like, you're sucked in, but you're still somewhat disconnected from what's going on. Yeah. It was interesting.
What was that called again?
Post Tenebras Lux. Light After Darkness.
It looked kind of surreal.
Yeah. And it has some definite weird surreal stuff going on. But basically about this like richer family that lives in Mexico and their interaction with others. But yeah. You saw No?
No. Yeah, we did No on Saturday. That was good. I guess it kind of fits into what we're going to be showing tonight a bit. It was about the no vote, the plebiscite vote to decide whether or not to keep Pinochet in power. And it kind of looks at it through the lens of this ad agency that Gael García Bernal is kind of a hotshot creative director in. And it's looking at they had 15 minutes a night on public television to make their case for voting no to end the dictatorship. So it's kind of this debate whether or not they're going to show all the atrocities that done, the oppression of the press and of people, the disappearances, the deaths, or whether or not to make it like, let's look towards the future, this is fun. And his angle is kind of, let's make it like a Coca-Cola ad or a Pepsi ad. And that gets pushed back and forth, whether or not it's good or bad. It's a pretty good way of looking at that.
Yeah.
And then I don't know what the hell Sunday was.
Sunday is this movie called Chronicle of a Boy Alone. It's a Argentine movie that's basically the 400 Blows from Argentina.
Okay.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And
last night we did Strawberry and Chocolate. It's a Cuban film, gay movie.
Didn't see it. Yeah.
Tonight we're doing a movie called Salvador Allende, which is...
Why are we showing that tonight?
It's a documentary about Salvador Allende, who was assassinated on September 11th, 1973. Last year we did The Battle of Chile, which is about the buildup of... So he was the first... Yeah, same director. He was the first democratically elected, like, Marxist or...
Leftist socialist.
Which they debate or talk about all of the nuances of his positions in this doc. But yeah, basically... I watched this one the other night. It's good. It's not fun necessarily. but it's interesting to see, to look back at like Latin America and see how they were the different things that inspired them to take the route that they did as far as politics and so forth. And, it seems like
they were addressing some things that we're still having a hard time addressing way, way before. Like, I don't know, healthcare.
Moving on.
Moving on. Tomorrow night, it's a movie called De Cierta Manera, One Way or Another. It's one of the first female-directed movies in Cuba, I believe. Our friend Mary Regalado is presenting that. Thursday is like a cocktail thing.
Cocktails and Mario Kart.
Cocktails right? and Mario Kart. Yeah, got to figure that out. Friday, Mi Vida Loca. Have you seen that?
Yeah, it's like a made-for-TV movie, right?
Yeah.
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 I think we watched it in school back in the day.
What is it?
It's like it's like an HBO movie, right?
Yeah.
I want to say it's an HBO movie about Echo Park. I just remember Mousy and Sad Girl are the two characters. One of them cheats with the other one's boyfriend, maybe gets pregnant. I could be telling this wrong. Mm. But anyways, these two best friends in high school become not friends, and it's about this friendship in Echo Park as like first or second generation immigrants.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So it's like a look at Latin Americans living in Echo Park, Los Angeles.
Yeah. And then Saturday is a movie called Wild Tales from Argentina.
Love that movie.
You've seen it?
Yeah.
Cool. The trailer looks amazing. I haven't seen it, but I've only heard amazing things about it. It's
like six dark comedies.
Yeah, it's six tales of revenge.
I know this film. Yeah, I've actually seen
it. That's great.
Look at this.
Yeah.
That opening scene.
We have seen some of this.
That is excellent. It is actually really, really good.
So that one is, it's on the trailer, it says presented by Almodovar, but it's a different director.
Yeah, it's an Argentine director.
Anyways.
Damien Chazelle or
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that's probably enough.
Yeah, if you're listening, highly encourage anybody, I don't know if it's sold out already or not, but Wild Tales, if you get a chance to go see that. It's well worth your time.
And since you're here, let's give you a little bit of Burt Reynolds laughing on the movie Hooper.
Have a good week, everybody.
There ain't nothing like the life of a Hollywood stuntman, 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 stuntman.